Special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and the Love Is Podcast. I'm excited to welcome the host of the Love Is Podcast, Kim Sorrell. Kim, how are you? And I know you're excited about our guest.
I'm doing great. Thank you. And yes, I am excited about our guest, Mark Cole, who has had many chapters in his life. And so I think I don't know that I've met anybody who has had such a diverse background as you have had. You played guitar, right? For like Leonard and Allman Brothers. And you got into movies and cinematography and did all that. And now you started this company with alternative healing and whatever. And along the way, you've done great at everything that you've done. Like you've excelled and won awards and did whatever at everything. And now you've got this, I'm not sure how old this new venture is, but very interesting. So I have been so excited to talk to you, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm in Boulder, Colorado at the Gaia Studios, and this is my background, their lunch area here. So I picked this, tried to pick a quiet spot to have this conversation. But yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, Mark, it's interesting. We talked before, and I was like saying, Kim, I said you were on before. You talked more about your cinematography and the amazing things that you educated me on cinematography. Like, I didn't know the things that went into it when we interviewed you the first time. It's such intriguing because people don't think about it. And I guess it's good to know the business is back moving again, right? After that little short stint with the writer strike and stuff and actor strike to kind of get back working a ton, right?
Well, I mean, it seems somewhat, but there's more strikes coming and, you know, the business is just shifting. It's just, you know, shifting like so many other businesses, you know, it's trying to find its legs again. You know, I don't really think any business is as it was, but you know, before COVID, I think we're in a very different, exciting time. I mean, the old systems of business are not necessarily working now. So we're developing, obviously, in every category of business, new systems that adapt to the new era that we're in. And the motion picture and film and entertainment business is, you know, doing that as well. So it's interesting, you know, it's adapting. And that's one thing I love. I love trying new things and adapting to new situations and scenarios. Yeah,
exactly.
Good. Kind of fun to be, you know, such diversity in your life, I would imagine. And life hasn't been without its trials for you and like for any of the rest of us. But now you're doing this thing. I'm just so curious about the alternative healing that you're involved in and the company that you started. If you could tell us about that, I would love it.
I mean, it's kind of a big story, but I'll give you somewhat the elevator pitch. But, through my music and by the way, I was not a guitar player for Leonard Skinner. I played with some of the folks in and around that area. I was in Jacksonville, Florida, but it was a very big music town when I was there as a teenager. And then I fell into the film business at a very young age there. And it just, I'm self-taught as I am with pretty much everything. But working my way up in motion pictures and documentaries and industrial films and commercials and stuff, I was always fascinated with storytelling and the human mind and how we operate and how we think. And, you know, when we create any story for cinema or, you know, television or documentary or whatever it is, I just love getting into the nuts and bolts of what the story really is, where did it come from, how we think, what resonates with us as an audience, making tons of commercials, thousands, you know, throughout my career. It's like, okay, what is it that people want to see? What is it that turns them off? What are they, you know, pulled into? What is the psyche behind the commercial? Not just necessarily, you know, the imagery or the, or whatever that might be, but the creative that, that drives sales, if you will, or makes us watch something. You know, when we look at something interesting, especially on film and television, you know, it's a type of hypnosis. We get glued to it and we want to see more of it. And that's, you know, a type of trance, if you will. And that always fascinated me. Like, what is that? You know, why are we drawn to some things and not other things? And, you know, some people like, you know, a really excellent comedian versus, you know, somebody that's not very good, they actually get you in some sort of trance. You know, they actually, you can't stop laughing. You can't stop looking at them, right? Prince or Michael Jackson, there's something about them that's hypnotic, right? That you just, they put you in a whole different state of consciousness. And we're, you know, people don't even know where they are, what they're doing. They're just mesmerized by that, right? So unknowingly, that's very parallel to what psychedelics do. I didn't know that at the time, but now I can see the crossover. I mean, I'm sitting here at Gaia, you know, and these conversations are very they intersect in quite some ways in the new world that's being developed here with collective consciousness and everything. It's about opening up the mind and opening up the potential of the mind and opening up awareness to everyone, you know, giving information that's never been available to, you know, most everybody, and to realize that we're way more powerful than we ever thought we are, and our path that we think we're on might not always be the one we're supposed to be on, you know. So it's a really fascinating time of revelation and change. There's a big change coming, and we're part of it. So the company came about, to answer your question, the company came about through, you know, I had several decades of success in television and film, and I became extremely busy. I was working all the time, traveling all the time. And I started, you know, just kind of losing myself or whatever. And, you know, business would go up and business would go down. There would be recessions. There would be things like that. And I realized that, you know, years later that I had attached my core identity to my profession of a director or whatever, right? So when work was good, I was good. When work wasn't good, I wasn't so good. So, and a big, you know, component, especially, you know, 80s, 90s, and 2000s of the creative process of filmmaking, or just in general, the industry, if you will, was alcohol. So everybody drank, there was happy hours, you know, it was just not only normal, it's like if you didn't drink, there was something wrong with you kind of thing. So, you know, I'm in this very stressful job, and it's very competitive, and everybody in it's super creative. So their minds are very active, and, you know, so everybody drank, and, you know, alcohol worked very well for me for a long time. It would just calm the mind and relax you, and you could actually become creative. It was somewhat meditative, you know? So, but along the way, like they say in the program, it was fun. And then it was fun with problems, and then it was just problems. So I started, and I came from a, you know, a little bit of history in my family of alcoholism, and that's a whole nother conversation of, you know, but this is how we adapt to stress in, you know, in most countries, but America especially, right? It's changing. It's changing. But anyway, about 20 years ago, I started a 10-year dive, if you will, of real struggle with this addiction or this alcoholism. I'm not really crazy about labels, but we'll call it what's familiar to the viewers. And anyway, I went down. I knew I had a problem. I wanted to kind of solve the problem and or address the problem. And sorry, another call came in. And I went down all the avenues that was Western or that was available. I was forward thinking, you know, at the time, tried everything, you know, went to hundreds and hundreds of AA meetings and did therapy and did, you know, all kinds of things, and nothing really stuck. And years later, I realized this. What happens to us is we have this little story that we tell ourselves of who we are or who we think we are, right? And it runs in the amygdala. They call it the default mode network or whatever, this illusionary, imaginary story of who we think we are. And the brain or the mind is very, very tricky too, because it wants to subconsciously validate that story all the time, right? It wants to see, it wants to be right. So unknowingly, my story was, I was a middle-aged, washed-up alcoholic director, right? Because that's what people were telling me, right? So that was my story. So it's spinning around in my head all the time, right? And again, I didn't know this at the time. And I'm looking for ways to always validate that. So no matter how many AA meetings I went to, no matter how many therapy sessions I went to, until I changed that core belief, I would always drink again because I wanted to prove myself right subconsciously. See, you are an alcoholic. They told you are there. See, you drank again. See, you are unlovable. They told you. See, you are washed up. You're not getting any jobs, you know? So then we give power to that and then we become that. And this is how the downward spirals happen so fast, right? They happen so quickly. I'm coming up on my 10th anniversary of no alcohol. So this was actually right now, somewhere around now, 10 years ago. I had shown up on a job, the first one, drunk. And I had never done that before. And they fired me, which obviously I should have. And I had this like 35-year reputation, impeccable reputation, literally gone in 10 minutes. And that was all about my reputation. Anyway, I ended up going on like a 3-month, I can't remember, honestly, but 2 or 3 month drinking binge. I was down to a 300 square foot apartment in Venice Beach, California. And it just basically shut the blinds and just kept drinking because I would wake up so shaky and I was just going out of my mind. And one day I was laying in bed and I had some sort of paralysis where I couldn't move and I started hallucinating. And, nobody was talking to me. I hadn't talked to my kids or, you know, nobody. I had my phone off most of the time anyway. And, I started like, you know, going into this paralysis and then I started hallucinating and I said, I'm dying. This is what it felt like. I felt like this is it. I could feel the life force kind of leaving me. And I went and I had been in rehab, I don't know, 5 times and in the hospital, like 8 or 10 times getting detoxed. And anyway, I was just, I don't want to try again because I've tried and tried, just doesn't work. So anyway, there was a little voice inside that said, just try it one more time. So obviously I did. I picked up the phone when I could find it and I called a friend and I said, can you find me a rehab? I'm going to give it one more shot. And they did. And they took me, it was in Malibu and they wouldn't let me in. And I was in such bad shape. So I had to go to the hospital again and detox. But anyway, I went in and I just went, I'm never coming back here again. I am never, ever, 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 ever coming back here again. And I did everything I could. And this one was in Malibu. The previous ones were in Florida. And it was a very different experience. But it stopped the spirals I was on. I couldn't like literally get through an hour without a drink. And so I needed to stop that so I could get some clarity. And then after that, I fell into the AA program in Los Angeles, which was very, it was much better than Florida. And I started meeting some real people and I started seeing that there was, you know, thousands of meetings a day in Los Angeles. So I was not alone. There was very big actors and executives and stuff in these places. So I understood I wasn't alone in the struggle. Learned a lot with that. I got into Kundalini yoga very heavily. And then, which is the ancient practice, it's the most sophisticated yoga practice out there. And it has a lot to do with the mind. And I started learning that this stuff was not necessarily my thoughts. It was not necessarily, this story was not really who I was. And I started cracking into that. And then I met somebody who started telling me about ayahuasca. And again, this is like 10 years ago or so, and it was very, very underground then. But I said, I'm interested in doing this. I don't know what, but I'm willing to try anything. And I remember telling my sponsor at the time, I'm going to do this plant medicine. I'm going to, try to, help see meaning in life, start to try to crack the code, if you will. And he said, absolutely not. You're not doing that, And I said, no, I am doing that. So I pushed back it. Anyway, I did it, and it totally just like, it was like they took the Etch-a-Sketch and just shook it, and it was just clear. And I had never felt more joyful in my entire life than I did after that ceremony or during that ceremony. I saw how everything is connected. I saw how all these belief systems that we have are such illusions, that our limitations are our fears, that there's no difference between us and the people that are running these massive organizations. It's all the way we think. I realized I didn't have a drinking problem. I had a thinking problem. So I went down that rabbit hole. So now I'm hanging around, the Kundalini yoga folks. I'm hanging around the ayahuasca people. I'm just doing ceremony after ceremony, trying to find my way. And I eventually, through ceremony, it showed me I had no job. I had no real money. I didn't know anybody really around, but I started looking at property to try to get out of this one room because I knew I'd probably pick up again. I was very lonely and whatnot. But anyway, I met somebody in a ceremony in the jungle who was a realtor, and he found me a house in Topanga. And I was like, Topanga, like that place that's, 40 minutes out of LA and in the hills and way out there in the middle of nowhere. And he goes, yeah. And I go, no way, man. I'll be up there drinking and I'll be isolated. I don't know anybody. I can't go to my meetings. He goes, well, just go look at the house. So this all has meaning, by the way. This comes full circle in a second. But anyway, so I go up there. I see this place. I can't afford it. Whatever. I walk in and immediately there was a sense of being there. I the medicine had shown me that something, I don't know, you can't explain in language, but that this was where I'm supposed to be. So I bought it. It made no sense. I couldn't afford it. I couldn't maintain it. I didn't have a job. I mean, whatever, but I did it. And slowly but surely, I rented a room to a local. The people in Topanga were very, and I didn't know much about Topanga at all, but there's a lot of healers. They started coming over. We started doing more ceremony work. We started doing sound baths. We started doing, meditations, and it became a place of healing for others. And then 6 years ago, I started, growing mushrooms, and it was very, very dark back then. It was like super, super illegal. And, people were like, there wasn't a lot of it going on, and it was hard to do. And we were growing in like, mason jars and pressure cookers. And we struggled for a long time, but there was something in me said, keep going, because I was using this medicine to just keep me in check, and we were making our own microdoses 6 years ago, right? Nobody heard about it then, really. So anyway, it developed into what it is today. And there's been many, many struggles, but I've been shown through the ceremony work that we do with it that this is my new purpose. Right. So I have a very different story now, if you will. So I changed my life through changing my story, but the psychedelics showed me my new purpose. Right. And so this struggle of this 10-year struggle of addiction and whatever alcoholism and was necessary for me to be where I am today, to speak authentically of the mystical, magical, scientific powers of these ancient medicines that have been here to help us. And we have helped 1,000 people, and it nothing brings me more joy to see people heal themselves, So it's not a great business model. you get them, they're not coming to you every week or month for more and more, but this is a huge conversation, and it's a huge time for it to be happening. It's it's amazing. Yeah.
Wow. You know, this is an amazing story, and I'll let Kim jump in the next question, but ayahuasca, is that major thing? Cause I mean, people talk about going to Peru to do this and, you know, it's, and, you know, and I have a, you know, someone else help in the performance. It's something that you shouldn't take some of that psychedelics without having someone there with you. Right. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. Now there's three main doses of most, psychedelics, right? There's the major dose or the hero's dose where you go deep and you find yourself and you know, that you definitely need supervision with, unless you're experienced. I mean, I do it alone sometimes, but, you know, a very experienced facilitator. And also it's very important that you come in, like we talk a lot about it. I'm sure everybody's heard the terms of the set and the setting, right? So the mindset that you're coming in with and the setting that you're in, like who's there. Is there other people there? Are you know, by yourself? Who's running it? Where'd the medicine come from? That's a huge one. That's where we come in quite a bit. But those are super important things. And to diet ahead of time to make sure the vessel, the body is as clear as possible. The mind is as settled as possible, you know, to do meditative work beforehand, not watch the news. Don't be around people that trigger you, you know, and then come in with, you know, a real solid of intention of what you want to see or learn or find, right? That's definitely ayahuasca operates. I don't know how much time we have here, so but about ayahuasca
about 8 more minutes.
So I better start talking faster or something. But anyway, and then we have the social dose, which is more a dose that you feel, and it's kind of light and fun. And then we have the microdose, which is an imperceptible amount that just basically subtracts worry and anxiety. So it's very, very effective, but it has no psychoactive characteristics to it.
Wow.
So those are the main categories. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've known people who are in that world that have said every time they do it, a miracle happens, that it's always life-changing, that it's just an incredible experience. And I think we've just kind of neglected, don't you think, Mark? We've sort of neglected all of these things that are grown on our earth, and we've ignored them for healing.
I remember the first ceremony I did. I came out and I was so joyful and happy. And I said to the shaman, I said, "How in the world can this be illegal? Like, why is this not me? What is up?" And by the way, it used to be for the whole of mankind up until, you know, 200 years ago. I mean, you know, I guess in 400 AD is when, you know, when the Catholic Church took over. This is documented in several books and made us, we used to be a psychedelic-based world, and now we're an alcohol-based world, right? So that shifted because alcohol disconnects you from spirit, right? So, but these things have been here. And anyway, so I remember the first time I did that ceremony, and it came out, and I said to the shaman, "How can this be illegal?" And he said to me, "Because happy people don't buy anything."
That's
and
true.
I never forgot that. I never forgot that. And I said, "They don't. They don't. It's bad for business, right? They mayhem, disconnecting people, chaos, racism, hatred. These are all created, right? We're not born with these things, right? They're created. So if everybody's fighting each other, that's easy to control. Fear controls, right? Happiness does not. Joy does not. Joy collaborates, right? Joy heals. Love heals, right? Truth, right? That's what psychedelics, that's the real key to psychedelics, is truth. Once you find truth, love and joy fall underneath that, right? But when there's truth, and you cannot hide it from the universe, you can lie to yourself all day long, but you cannot hide to the universe. And that's what a lot of people are fearful of when they do these deep dive, is they're really afraid of themselves, what they're going to find. Because as you do this work, you cleanse yourself from the lies, you cleanse yourself from fear. And then this is my belief, and I stand in it really well with a lot of very vast experience in this, is meaning. When we do not have meaning in life, and we do not have a reason to get out of bed in the morning, we will never be happy. Sure. So psychedelics show you why you're here, why you were given this purpose in life, And once you find that, everything else seems to fall in line.
Mark, so, I've gone through this journey.
I'm sure we're close to time.
I'm going to get right to the last question Kim has, and then where we can find information. We definitely have to have a part two on this. This is awesome stuff. I wanted to say that basically I went through this journey once I came back from Texas to Pittsburgh in the process of separation, divorce, and went through self-hypnosis, where I listened to the law of attraction types of stuff and different things, self-hypnosis every night, all night during while I'm sleeping. And it's just totally healed me in so many ways. I can imagine the next level of what psychedelics could do, because because once we can control the subconscious, we can start to understand our subconscious more and be able to really allow our brains to work the way they need to work. It just it's a game changer in so many ways. You can discover when you're on the wrong path. You can discover when you're going the wrong direction because you're listening to yourself.
Right.
You're listening to your intuition and stuff, right?
Exactly. And he, by the way, this is really about, we have amnesia. This is really about remembering what you already know. You already knew this. It's inside you. It's just getting rid of the clutter that's clogging that information from you because you know who you are.
All right. Kim has a love question. Then we're going to ask one more question. We're going to find information. This is just great stuff. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah. So Mark, I dedicated a year to figuring out the true meaning of love. And the things that I found out about love just blew my mind, changed my life, rocked my world. And I'm curious where love plays a role in all of this that you're talking about. Like, did you, after your first experience or at some point in time, look at love completely differently? Or how does love play a role?
Excellent question. And again, these are all through my personal experiences. And, you know, you hear the word love and you're like, oh, I love that. No, maybe I lust that person. Maybe it's not love, you know, maybe, you know, whatever. But this is the way I really believe it now. I go back to truth, right? I don't know if you've read the book, Conversations with God, but the dictation from God, one of the quotes he says is truth. Underneath truth is joy, and underneath joy is love. So when you find truth, like if I love someone, I have to respect them first, right? If I love myself, I have to respect myself first, which means I have to live with integrity, which means I have to live with truth. Once I trust myself and respect myself, then I can love myself, right? And then when I do the right thing with the right person, you know, you feel that warm feeling in your gut that's, you know, it's right. And when you know something's right, you know, it's true. And then that's where love is. That's my belief. And then the heart resonates. They're doing many studies. The coherence of the heart is all, again, from truth. And truth is safety and security and respect and integrity. All go to truth, right? Mm-hmm. And when you do these ceremonies, like I said, you can't hide from it.
No.
You can deny it all you want, but that's when the ceremony gets really difficult, is when you're believing your own bullshit and you start squirming and it's saying, stop it. And when I do ceremonies, I say, cut out the BS. Just stop it. stop it. Just stop. Stop trying to justify it. Stop trying to just stop it.
100%.
It's either this or that. Yeah. And it's really easy. And then that opens up the channels to what you were just saying a minute ago, Neil. It's like you're discovering yourself because it's been there. And all you're doing in psychedelics is learning, you're teaching yourself, because the human mind has amnesia. We've forgotten. Mm-hmm. Children, they know. That's why they're joyful, right?
That's so true. You know, the final finish up is where we can find information on frequency caps. It's very interesting, Mark. You had that idea. You know, if you're a fan of Billions or ever watched the show Billions on Showtime, one episode involved, they were looking at trying to bottle the whole psychedelic thing with the shaman and all that. And so you're, I guess, ahead of your time in so many ways. But where can people find frequency caps?
Yeah, well, it's frequencycaps.com is the website, and Frequency Caps is our Instagram. And we have lots of education, and our mission is to really educate people, just like we're doing right now, with awareness, so that they're not afraid of it, right? And and they know that this is because I'm living proof that this works. So it's frequencycaps.com and frequencycaps at Instagram.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thanks, Mark.
Okay. All right.
That was a special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and the Love Is Podcast, guys. Take care.